This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Last month, many Puerto Ricans were incensed by spring breakers and other visitors who flouted local rules imposed to reduce the spread of COVID-19. Puerto Rico was one of the first U.S. jurisdictions to issue a mask mandate, and it maintained strict curfews. The pandemic wasn't politicized, and when it arrived amid earthquakes in the south and the protracted efforts to rebuild after Hurricane Maria, Puerto Rico's fragile healthcare system was still able to cope. Tourists are always welcome, but as one local told NBC News, people can't come here and act as if the virus doesn't exist. They have a sense of entitlement and apathy I don't understand. For the mainland, the island has long been a locus of both entitlement and apathy. But next week, politicians, some of them anyway, will be paying attention. On April 14th, Wednesday, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, the National Resources Committee, which oversees territorial affairs, will consider two competing bills. One would provide for the admission of Puerto Rico as a state. The other would provide for true self-determination. Either would be historic. Both are deeply opposed by the GOP. There's also a rich history of division within Puerto Rico over what its status should be, but most agree that the current situation, this disenfranchised limbo, isn't it. OTM producer Alana Casanova-Burgess, also is host of the La Brega podcast, produced by WNYC and Futuro Studios. And in this episode, La Brega offers up some insight into that part of American history that the mainland mostly doesn't know and needs to understand. Here's Alana.
I've noticed that outside of Puerto Rico, many people seem uncomfortable calling the island a U.S. colony. In English, you'll hear the word territory or commonwealth, protectorate even. And that used to be the case in Puerto Rico, too. But not anymore.
Hay muchos en Puerto Rico, muchos, aún dentro de su partido, que dice que sí, que Puerto Rico es una colonia, por eso que se llama de descolonización.
Eso es ser una colonia completamente.
Que Puerto Rico es una colonia de los Estados Unidos.
No sea una colonia.
People would twist themselves into pretzels to avoid the C word. And there's a reason for that.
Puerto Ricans were promised that they were not a colony.
This is Yarimar Bonilla. Yarimar is a political anthropologist. She has a column in the Puerto Rican newspaper El Nuevo Día, and she's also written for outlets like The Washington Post and The Nation. That promise that Yarimar mentioned about not being a colony, it's pretty much been broken. In 1952, Puerto Rico had adopted this new political status called the ELA, the Estado Libre Asociado, or Free Associated State, which doesn't really mean much. In English, we call it a commonwealth. And what does that mean? Is it like the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? No. Is it like the Commonwealth of Canada? Also no. Commonwealth doesn't really mean anything concrete, but it's the kind of word that made everyone feel better about the U.S. having a colony. The Estado Libre Asociado, the ELA, promised self-governance, but not independence. It was a kind of compromise created by the island's first elected governor, Luis Muñoz Marín, in order to massage the continued colonial interests of the U.S. in Puerto Rico and present a sovereign future to his residents. Marín came up with this label that sounded like decolonization.
he thought that, like, since it had all this language of decolonization, he thought that he could set legal precedents to kind of, if you build it, they will come. Like, if mm-hmm. you build it, they will decolonize mm-hmm. kind of idea. And then meanwhile, the United States, they're like, well, we're going to pretend that we're decolonizing, but we're not really going to decolonize. So it's like both parts were kind of calling each other on their bluff. It kind of reminds me of this like Seinfeld episode that I love where like George Costanza meets up with the parents of his deceased fiance, and he tells them he has a house in the Hamptons, and they know it's not true.
It's a 2-hour drive. Once you get in that car, we are going all the way to the Hamptons.
And they all get into a car and start driving to the Hamptons. And and they also all know that the others know that it's all a farce.
Almost there.
Yeah, this is the end of Long Island. Where's your house?
We go on foot from here.
All right.
So I basically, like, we've been in a car with the United States headed to the Hamptons when we all know there's no house in the Hamptons, you know?
There's some indication that Luis Muñoz Marin and the U.S. Congress both knew there was no house in the Hamptons. In 1950, while testifying in a House committee hearing, he said, quote, "If the people of Puerto Rico should go crazy, Congress can always get around and legislate again." That's what he said in Washington, D.C. But in Puerto Rico, he claimed this new status would be a definitive end to, quote, every trace of colonialism. Part of the promise of the ELA was that it was supposedly the best of both worlds: self-governance with the protection of the U.S. military and the mobility of a U.S. passport. It was also imagined as a key to prosperity, having a link to the wealthy U.S. while also being able to manage our own affairs. But that was 70 years ago, and recently, this idea has been dealt some severe blows. 15 years ago, a recession became a debt crisis, which is now an austerity crisis. Then, in 2016, during two Supreme Court hearings, the U.S. government itself pushed the argument that Puerto Rico wasn't really sovereign after all. The next nail in the coffin came in 2016. It was a law named, unironically, Ley Promesa, or Promise. That's the federal law that installed a fiscal control board to manage the island's finances and implement austerity policies in order to service the debt. These series of events created an awakening. In response to the Promesa law, protesters declared that the time of the promises was over. Se acabaron las promesas. The ELA had been a lie. Something between Puerto Rico and the U.S. had been broken.
After all these revelations, people started talking about the death of the ELA, the death right. of the Commonwealth. And I became really fascinated by that idea. Like, what does it mean for a political project to die?
In what some called a sign of mourning, black and white Puerto Rican flags started popping up instead of the red, white, and blue one. There were murals denouncing colonialism, too. And then came the deaths from Maria. Not metaphorical, not performative, but thousands of lives lost in the aftermath. And here is where maybe Puerto Rico could have used the benefits of the island's murky relationship with the U.S. to rebuild from the hurricane. Instead, President Trump threw his infamous paper towels and the White House slow-walked funds, leaving many residents without electricity for nearly a year. Some people are still living under tarps, 3 years later.
Who feels decolonized in Puerto Rico? Like, who's like, we're good? I want to start at the beginning. I want to think about what was the ELA promised to be and who believed in that promise. Who said we had a house in the Hamptons?
Yarimar decided to start right at home with her grandmother.
Ay, 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 ay. Come, ten, no llores.
That voice you hear is my 93-year-old grandmother, Maria Monserrate Fuentes Herrera, better known as Monsi. She loves to sing. In fact, it's hard to get her to stop singing. Like many Puerto Ricans, I grew up very close to my grandmother. She was always around, telling me to fix my hair, asking me if I was really going to go out dressed like that, and basically helping raise me along with my mother. During the pandemic, we spent lots of time joking around and filming funny videos for Instagram, where her handle is Bad Monsi. This is us with my mom singing Bad Bunny. No joke, my grandma really does love Bad Bunny.
Habla malo, pero actúa bien.
She thinks he has a potty mouth, but a good heart.
Ay, me encanta Bad Bunny. A mí me encanta él.
The pandemic has also given me a chance to discover her surprising brushes with history.
Yo fui a un cumpleaños de Muñoz Marín, yo te lo dije.
It turns out she had gone to a birthday party for none other than Gobernador Luis Muñoz Marín. She was invited by a suitor who coyly asked if she liked to join him at a birthday function. When he explained who the party was for, she lost it.
Yo qué qué?
I asked her what she wore to this special occasion, and unsurprisingly, she dressed in red, the color of Muñoz's party. She wore a bright red pantsuit and a pala, the straw hat traditionally worn by Puerto Rican peasants. This was her homage to the color and symbol of Muñoz's party, the Populares. She's bummed that there weren't cell phones back then so she could have a picture, not just of her slamming outfit, but of this historic encounter. What she remembers most fondly about those times is the conviction and commitment of the political leaders.
Ramos Antonini.
She fondly remembers Ernesto Ramos Antonini, the well-known Black socialist lawyer who was one of the founders of the party. But her favorite, of course, was Luis Muñoz Marín. Just looking at him, she says, inspired confidence. She loves to talk about how he would go to the chozas of the jíbaros, homes with dirt floors and few belongings, and have coffee with the residents in the little cups they fashioned out of hollowed-out coconuts. He swore the coconut cups made the coffee taste even better. Every time she tells the story, something about that small gesture of grace really gets to her. She's convinced that he really did love Puerto Rico and just wanted the best for it.
Que él sentía, amaba Puerto Rico. Él lo amaba. Él lo amaba.
This kind of uncritical nostalgia is a common staple among Puerto Rican abuelitas. But actually, Luis Muñoz Marín did a lot to erase rural life through his emphasis on industrial development. But for my grandmother, it was all about eradicating the poverty that she grew up with. Bread, land, and liberty. That was the promise. And my grandmother believed in it because she saw it with her own eyes. Lands were being massively redistributed. Even her uncle got a parcel. During this time, industry was also arriving. Homes and schools were being built.
Y siguió mejorando, y siguió mejorando.
For my grandmother, everything was getting better and better. The ELA really did seem like the best we could hope for, the best of all possible worlds.
The people of Puerto Rico felt, hey, el ELA, lo mejor de los dos mundos.
This is Deepak Lambanieves. He's a development planner at the Center for a New Economy and a good friend. Deepak argues that the ELA was never really about decolonizing Puerto Rico. It was about using Puerto Rico as an economic experiment, as a counterpoint to communism during the Cold War.
Apartment complexes, bilingual schools, modern hospitals, luxury hotels. Progress can be seen everywhere. This is Puerto Rico, Progress Island, USA.
To the outside, the ELA was sold as an economic success story. But all that economic growth was built on unsustainable compromises. From the beginning, there was an over-reliance on tax incentives, which Washington could enact and take away as it pleased. Once the tax incentives were taken away, companies started fleeing Puerto Rico, and the government took on massive debt to stay afloat. By 2016, it became clear that Puerto Rico was descending into what economists literally call a death spiral. Everyone began putting pressure on Washington to pass some kind of debt relief. Among those making the rounds on Capitol Hill was Deepak. He thought,
hey, there's another way of addressing the Puerto Rican dilemma with the economic situation and also the debt issue.
He was initially confident about the impact he could have. He assumed he would be taken seriously. After all, he's a smart guy who works at a fancy think tank where they had developed a solid, cost-effective plan. But Washington politicians had no time for him. Deepak says they made him feel like he was begging for a handout, or worse, praying for mercy. He returned from D.C. convinced that Puerto Rico was quite simply a colony, and that the island just doesn't matter to the United States. If you read a news story about Puerto Rico's debt crisis, you will most likely see it accompanied by a picture of desolate Paseo de Diego. This pedestrian mall used to be a bustling commercial district. Visitors from surrounding parts of the Caribbean would come and load up on goods to sell back home. My mom was a master seamstress. Every year we would do our back-to-school shopping, happily combing through the big bolts of fabric at stores like La Riviera, where we would purchase fabric for a whole semester's worth of new handmade dresses. Now, that's a long-lost memory. Most of those stores are shuttered, and the few that remain are struggling to survive. Alana and I were recently in Río Piedras at a time when it felt much more active. There was a caravana, a political rally where people get in their cars and drive around following a candidate during election season. We were asking folks there if the Ela had died. And one guy was quick to answer.
El Ela es un engaño. No murió. Él ni siquiera nunca nació.
It never died, he said, because it was never born. He was there supporting a new movement in Puerto Rico that wants to stop talking about status and focus on other fundamental issues like government corruption, gender violence, and the need to audit the debt. The caravana was for the campaign of a young politician named Manuel Natal. He narrowly lost the race to be San Juan's mayor, but even this near victory was astonishing, given that Natal is from a brand new political party.
So how would you define the ELA?
It was el maquillaje de la colonia. It was a way of putting a little bit of makeup on our colonial relationship with the United States.
A little lipstick on the pig?
Yeah. The pig is the colony, not the people of Puerto Rico.
Good.
Natal actually used to really believe in the ELA. He comes from a family of populares and was once a rising star in the party. But a few years ago, he made a radical decision and became an independent, citing corruption among his colleagues. Then, along with other progressive leaders, he helped found a new political party called Movimiento Victoria Ciudadana. Its members have different visions. Many are pro-independence, but some are pro-statehood. And others, like Natal, are soberanistas, meaning they want more local sovereignty while still retaining their ties to the U.S. But they all agree on one thing. Decolonization is necessary, and we need a new process for deciding which status we want. For decades, the political parties in Puerto Rico have been organized around status options. And every couple of years, we undergo these performative votes that are described as plebiscites or referendums. Back in the late 60s, when NBC was reporting on the first plebiscite vote, they called out right away the irony of this spectacle.
Most Puerto Ricans, even those who favor a commonwealth, agree on one thing. This plebiscite is, at best, only a temporary solution. The United States is not legally bound by its results, and neither is Puerto Rico.
At best, these are little more than opinion polls. In the most recent one last November, the statehood option won by a slim margin, receiving 52% of the votes cast. But these plebiscites are non-binding. They're not tied to any legislation and have no support in Washington. They're basically another bluff. It's like, once again, we're getting in a car heading for the Hamptons.
So what are our other alternatives?
Natal's party proposes what they call a constitutional assembly, in which representatives of each political option could negotiate directly with Washington the terms of each status choice. And what would this do? Ideally, it would bring concrete answers to enduring questions, like, would we have dual citizenship if we were independent? Would we have access to federal programs like Pell Grants as an associated republic? And maybe the most delicate question, but also the most important one. Would any of these options be tied to reparations for over 120 years of colonial rule? I started the pandemic posting videos of my grandmother on social media, joking that she was la influencer. But by the time the political campaigns were in full swing, she had become a bona fide social media sensation.
Dime, hija, ¿por quién vas a votar? Pues yo quiero un cambio, pero un cambio radical.
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 I posted a video of her in a rocking chair where I asked her how she was going to vote this time around. She surprised us all by saying that she supported the pro-independence candidate Juan Dalmau. The conventional wisdom was that only young voters were supporting the alternative candidates like Natal and Dalmau, and that older voters were afraid of change. Her video went viral. Dalmau even used it for one of his TV spots. And then the morning shows came calling.
Como toda una influencer, como Bad Bunny ha conquistado las redes sociales por sus videos.
She then wrote and sang a political song that also took off.
Ni azul es ni colorado.
Ajá.
Ni azul es ni colorado. Yo quiero la patria nueva que nos propone Dalmau.
Ahí está.
And the weekend before the election, Dalmau himself actually came to visit her and brought her flowers, which put her over the moon.
No lo puedo creer.
After a lifetime of voting for the Populares and of supporting the ELA, her public support of an independentista was surprising. But it doesn't mean that she wants independence itself.
No, no independencia por ahora.
She told me she voted for Dalmau simply because she thought he would make a good governor. As far as the status, she felt like that could be dealt with later.
Entonces después se podía bregar con lo otro, ¿sabes? Poco a poco.
Like a good popular, she thinks we should just kick the status can down the road. But you know who is really kicking that can down the road really hard all the time? The U.S. Congress. They refuse to commit to anything or to even speak clearly about why it insists on keeping Puerto Rico as an ambiguous transition land. So where does that leave us? Honestly, I don't know. But I'm skeptical of all the options currently on the table. For example, when I consider independence, I get excited about the possibility of being our own country. But then I look around at our neighbors in the Caribbean and see that many have the same challenges as Puerto Rico. Indebted economies, austerity regimes, huge diasporas, the challenges of disaster recovery, and battles over corruption. Independence is clearly not a silver bullet. It doesn't guarantee sovereignty. Instead of battling the Fiscal Control Board, we might end up battling the World Bank or the IMF. But when I consider statehood, I think of Hawaii and how the native population there was shut out of much of the prosperity and development that statehood supposedly ushered in. Or I look at the movement for Black Lives in the U.S., and the discrimination suffered by people of color in the States. And it makes me wonder if anything other than second-class citizenship will ever be available to us. So I end up back where we've been for all these years, at an impasse. Yet, something feels different about the current moment. The signs of change might be subtle, but they're there. In the ubiquity of the black and white protest flags, in the dark lyrics of a Bad Bunny song, and in the transformations at the ballot box as thousands move towards alternative candidates. So perhaps, if the death of the ELA and the end of the promises means anything, it's the realization that the world we deserve is not something that can be promised, conceded, or guaranteed, but it's also not something that we can keep waiting for.
Coming up, that one time Puerto Rico absolutely owned the U.S. in basketball.
This is On the Media.
On the Media is supported by Constant Contact. Whether it's online, offline, or somewhere in between, Constant Contact's tools help small businesses stay connected with customers and do more business online. Learn more at ConstantContact.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with a Name Your Price tool, providing information on a range of insurance coverage and price options. More at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.